This is a Defocus Media production.
So we're very lean, and I think that's important, but to do that, time is the number one thing. So I had a one-year-old and a newborn when we had this, when we opened. We were up till midnight. We opened in the other practice at the same time. It's time. It's if you have someone out sick, if you have someone on vacation, we have to step up and go, okay, I'm sitting up till 10 o'clock at night putting orders in because I want them out the next day. They always say blood, sweat, and tears, and that's exactly right.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the 2020 podcast, bringing clarity to business, entrepreneurship, and life. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me again. We are definitely going to be having a fantastic episode today because I have a wonderful guest that I'm sure many of you have met before, Dr. Rachel Rubel. And if in case you haven't met her or heard of her before, she is the president of the North Carolina Optometric Society, co-owner of 3 optometric practices. She was named the 2017 North Carolina Young Optometrist of the Year, 2018 Young Optometrist of the South, and a Thea Award winner from the Women in Optometry. She lectures all around the country about business and finance and other topics. She also happens to be a Tom Brady fan, which I happen to be partial to. And actually, Rachel, I think we share the same birthday, if I'm not mistaken, October 21st?
20th.
Oh, you're the 20th. Oh, we're close enough. You're still a Libra, so we're good. So anyways, that still makes you very special. And on top of that, she is a wife and mother of 2 beautiful girls. And so you know she's a very busy lady. Thank you so much for being here, Rachel. I really appreciate you taking the time to join me.
Thanks so much for having me. And just so you know, we're not Libras anymore. Astrology all changed.
I had no idea.
Yes, I just found out too. We're something else.
What does that make me now? I'm so lost.
Maybe a Capricorn? I don't even remember, but it's not Libra.
Oh my gosh. I actually never read horoscopes. I just assume I'm a Libra and other people take that for whatever it is. So, okay, well, I'll have to look into that now. Well, all the other stuff is still true. You're still a Tom Brady fan.
Yeah.
And you told me an interesting story that I really wanted to ask you more about, but I was busy with patients today. But you told me that there's a history there, running joke that you married Brad because he looks like Tom Brady. And
yeah, we've had a lot of stories with that.
And you were on Good Morning America. I wanted you actually, if you don't mind, telling me a little bit about that experience. How's it going, guys? I just want to take a quick minute of your time to introduce you to a new service, a new little bit of technology that's going to become invaluable to us as eye care providers in the very near future. As we know, online services like e-commerce and telehealth have blown up during COVID. Their accelerated pace has really changed the eye care game, and it's time for us as eye care providers to make sure we are on top of these services so we're providing the best level of care for our patients. And I'm very excited to introduce you to a company named Lensbox, which is going to combine all of these online services like e-commerce, telehealth, subscription models, contact lens sales, eye drop sales, you name it, all into one tidy little package for us to be able to communicate to our patients much more clearly. So keep it locked to learn more about Lensbox. In the meantime, go to shoplensbox.com or just send me a message on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever you like to learn more. I'll be coming to you with more information real soon. Until then, enjoy the rest of this episode. I'll talk to you soon.
Oh, it was so cool. We actually were flying up for a Patriots game at Foxborough and stopped in New York City. And we're like, let's get in line for Good Morning America at 4 a.m. We're like, let's see if we can get seats.
Yeah.
They ended up putting us in the very front row right next to Robin Roberts and Michael Strahan. And during the commercial breaks, they actually sit and come and interact with you.
Oh, that's great.
And they, Michael Strahan and Brad just like hit it off, were talking. And Robin Roberts came over and said, you look just like Tom Brady. And I just start laughing because people have told him that for years.
Yeah.
And so every commercial break, they're like, Tom, what do you think of that? I'm like, oh my gosh, now they're calling you Tom.
That's so funny. That's so awesome. What a cool experience. That's awesome. That's great. Well, you know, ODs out there who are following you, anybody who is following you on social media knows that one area of expertise that you really are fantastic at is the business and the finance side of things. And you do lecture and you have been lecturing still on these types of topics. So I wanted to start by kind of going into that kind of head first here. Basically, you know, a lot of new grads have a lot of questions about how to deal with their finances, how to work off their student debt. Are there certain mistakes or kind of common flaws you see in a lot of young ODs when they come out of school, their approach maybe not being right? Is there something that you see there that needs to be corrected?
Well, maybe not so much mistakes, but just things we don't know. I was green as could be coming out of school. And looking back, some of the things that I recommend now is have someone review their contracts. You get this contract and you focus on that salary number. And yes, you want it to be a nice salary, but focus on everything else. I see a lot of doctors I talk to not focus on the non-compete, and that's really burned a lot of doctors, or not focus on the benefit package. And the benefits can really add up if you really take into account everything you can add into a contract. Mm-hmm. So just some of the things to be aware of, making sure, you know, I wish, looking back, I would have started a Roth IRA when I was in school. Mm. And so I'm like, gosh, you know, if I would have done that, how much money would have already made now having that extra few years? Mm. So just some things I would have done. You know, Brad and I had a ton of student debt, and he bought my engagement ring with our student loans. And so I'm like, maybe I appreciate it, but gosh, we had all that student debt to pay back. So just being mindful of where all your student loan money is going to is really important. Don't go out and buy that yellow Ferrari right out of the gate. We know someone that did that.
Oh my gosh, really? I was going to say, do you have enough of a loan that could afford a Ferrari? That's incredible.
Yeah, he used it with his first, he took out a loan with his first job, and we've talked to him 10 years out, and he still has student debt. And that's a big thing I'm very proponent of. Get rid of that student debt, pay it down, you know, take that extra job on the weekends to start making that extra money. And that interest is killer. If you really look at how much you're paying over time, just start nailing down one day at a time, and lots of ways to do that too.
Yeah. Well, any specific or maybe a few techniques or tips that you might want to share with the young ODs out there who are working off that student debt?
Yeah. So we did a modified Dave Ramsey, and we didn't know who Dave Ramsey was when we started this, but I took three envelopes. One was for entertainment, one was for gas, and one was for groceries. And I said, this is how much we're spending a month. And granted, I mean, both of us had totaling over $250,000 in debt of student loans. So every month we'd put that cash in the envelopes, go to the grocery store, buy the groceries. At the end of the month, we'd kind of see where we had money left, what envelope was completely empty, and where we had to figure out what to do. And I mean, we really got creative in figuring out, here's free things to do in this new city we live in and not having to spend money. But we still traveled to Europe. We traveled all over the U.S. And had all that debt. We just did it in a more frugal manner, not whining and dining ourselves like we thought we would and hopefully someday will.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a really, really important approach. And having that creating that specific kind of guideline for yourself, I guess, is like, here's how much we're going to spend on this X, Y, and Z. I think that really helps if you create that in the beginning, and then you just know it becomes somewhat automated at that point, right? Which is so important. Every time I've spoken to anybody in the financial world, a couple friends who are financial planners, that's what they say is try to automate as much as you can, create those pockets, those envelopes, if you will. Things become a lot easier versus just kind of guessing on a month-to-month basis. That's really important.
It is. I mean, I think you just don't realize like how much you eat out, how much lunches you could be making, or how many dinners you're going out to eat. And it just made us aware and conscious. Once we had that debt paid off, and we had all of that paid off in 4.5 years. Wow. And now it's just ingrained in us how to live. So we're not living this lavish lifestyle outside of our means. You know, we're very comfortable, and it's just that has really set us up over time.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Would you say, do you see different patterns in older ODs, not necessarily older, but people who've been practicing for a few years? Do you see similar patterns or different patterns? Any other I guess, mistakes or you know, lack of information that you might see in that kind of demographic?
Yeah. So I've talked to some ODs that, you know, maybe in the retirement age, and a couple of things they've mentioned is learn billing and coding. And then, you know, you may be coming out of school going, I have no idea how to bill and code and use those modifiers. Take those courses. They may not be your certified credit for your license for your state, but they're so important. I have this motto and I've always lived by it. Work smarter, not harder. You know, what we can see 8 to 12 patients a day and make the same amount down the street as someone seeing 20 patients a day. Yeah. You really just have to figure out insurances and billing and coding. And talking to a practice that I did buy out, he said, oh, that was never my forte. I just didn't deal with it. But that is a huge part of business.
Yeah.
So really, if you look now, that's what I'd start learning a lot of.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I guess in that, there's a quote that I've heard a few times, and I think that falls within it, is working on your business versus working in your business. I think that's something as an owner you have to learn to do at some point, right?
You got it.
Very important. Well, on that note, speaking of business and being a business owner, you are a multiple business owner, 3 practices, if I'm not mistaken. Have you added one in the last couple of weeks? The way you're going, it wouldn't be
working
surprising.
On it.
There you go. Okay. All right. That's breaking news right here on the 2020 podcast. Yay. Dr. Rubel. Well, tell me about, if you don't mind, you know, we're going to delve into this a little bit more, but how do you manage the 3 different practices? Obviously, you're not at every single one every day. How do you split your time and how do you make sure you're overseeing all of those practices?
Yeah, I find I really enjoy overseeing all the practices, kind of being an administrator, for lack of a better word. So I have a Google Calendar. I have numerous colors going. I figure out, you know, where I need to be, where all the doctors and the staff need to be for which day at which office, and I set it up monthly. Okay. So they all can see it. Everyone has a shared calendar. Myself, my husband Brad, and my partner, Dr. Ryan Court, we all can see each other's personal calendars, which is really nice to figure out for vacations and meetings, mm-hmm. who's going to be where. So that's first and foremost, figuring out where to be. I always like to, I call them surprise visits. So there's one office that I may get to once a month in work there. Sometimes it's not even once a month. But I like to pop in there and I walk in and surprise them and it keeps them on their toes, I tell you.
No kidding.
And I walk in, they're like, is it bad? Is it good? I'm like, no, it's all good. Just came to say hi. And just always, you want them to know like, hey, you're involved, you're there.
Yeah.
And we use an app called Slack. So every day I'm communicating with my staff at all and doctors at all the offices. I talk with my docs about billing and coding. I talk with my staff about everything regarding patients. So it really keeps me in the loop of what's going on.
Oh, that's amazing. And that's so far beyond my ability to coordinate and organize my own life. It's crazy. My wife and I are still trying to figure out how to keep our calendars linked so we know when to book appointments for the kids. So the fact that you have that, that's incredible. And definitely have a lot to learn from you on that front. That's for sure. So on the topic of these different practices, 2 of them are sublease practices. Is that correct?
They are, yeah.
Next door to Lens Crafters, and you have 1 private practice.
We do.
I'd like to dig into the private practice side for a minute, and then I want to get your take on the whole kind of comparison between the two. But I've personally, you know, received many questions over the last, you know, couple of years or so about what it takes to start a private practice. Now, I think I just heard you say you bought yours out. Is that correct? Was that a different practice?
That was the sublease, actually, that I took over from an older doc.
Gotcha. Okay. So, you know, a lot of younger ODs or, you know, maybe practicing ODs who are interested in trying to determine whether they should buy somebody out or maybe if the opportunity is not there, what does it take to start cold, to start a private practice cold? You know, and from the perspective of how much does it cost, kind of a roundabout number, or how much advertising do you need to do, or how much time does it take? It's hard to put, you know, precise numbers to all of those different categories, but I'd love to get your take on what your experience was with Belmont Eye. And, you know, how long has it been open? How much time have you invested in all those different things?
Yeah, so my husband opened Belmont Eye in January of 2017. And we bought the building. So I'm all about buying commercial real estate versus renting. And that's, we actually have another company my husband and I run where we have rental properties, commercial and residential, and just kind of something else to do on the side, you know, add to our plate.
As if you don't have enough already. I get it.
I know. So we came across the building. We loved it. It's on a main historic main street. It's perfect. Bought the building with a loan. And then had to start the practice. Well, you're living with two people that had so much debt that we're frugal McDougal. We're like, okay, we're going to do this the most inexpensive way possible, make it different. We wanted boutique up front and medical optometry in the back. And so we worked with a couple companies that some of our equipment came from them when we had to use their labs. Zeiss has been wonderful for us. I mean, we've got Zeiss exam chairs and slit lamps and four opters in our rooms, and we're essentially on loan. As long as we use their lab, they write off the cost of our equipment, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's incredible.
We didn't want to go guns a-blazing and go, we've got to buy every single piece of equipment. So we said, what's the most important? The Topcon Maestro we have, which is an OCT, a retinal camera, and a pachymeter, and anterior side camera as well. So I had all in one, and that's great for a cold start. You get all in one. You don't have to have lots of pieces of equipment there. We got the eye care, AR, the NIDAC auto refractor, keratometer, topographer, and an old Humphrey Field I found on OD's Facebook Marketplace.
That's awesome. That's fantastic.
So I'm like, wow, we need a field. So we found that. And then frames, we didn't want to go crazy. I've heard of doctors that go and buy 1,000 frames for their practice and then you're sitting on them. So we started very minimum, few frame lines, and over the years have built. The biggest thing, it wasn't so much the financial. So we had a loan for the building, a loan for the practice. Both of those are completely paid off, and we started January of 17.
Wow, that's fantastic.
But it's just working diligently and really keeping the cost of goods low. Staffing, I mean, all of that, that can really drive up. We didn't go and hire 5-10 staff. We knew we were going to have one full-time doc, so we hired one staff person. Now we have, this is crazy, we have two full-time doctors, and right now we're running with two staff.
Wow.
And that's it.
Wow.
It's we have an associate doctor working full time, and she is amazing, even helping out in the optical, because she wants to learn that side of it and learn the business side of it. And it's, so we're very lean, and I think that's important. But to do that, time is the number one thing. So I had a 1-year-old and a newborn when we had this, when we opened.
Wow.
So we were up till midnight working on the books. We opened the other practice at the same time. It's time. It's, if you have someone out sick, if you have someone on vacation, we have to step up and go, okay, I'm sitting up till 10 o'clock at night putting orders in because I want them out the next day. And knowing that you're investing all of that time back into the practice, and if you're okay with that, that's the way to do it. So took a lot of time. They always say blood, sweat, and tears, and that's exactly right.
Yeah, no kidding. That's one thing I think a lot of people overlook is, you know, you look at the financial burden or, you know, how much, you know, it's going to cost up front and how much you're going to make, or, you know, you don't get a salary for a certain period of time or whatever it might be, but you have to be willing to be there and stay up until whatever hours it might be. Yeah, and that commitment, that sacrifice is tough, especially with two little babies. Our daughter actually was born. Our first daughter was born the week we opened the clinic. So I was off work for a couple of weeks to begin, but you know, that was then splitting my time between the sublease, the private practice, and family as well. So I definitely feel that that burden quite significantly.
Wow. Yeah, Brad upfit the building, and he would be there till 4 a.m.
Wow.
Because he demoed it and he did the main renovation. And I'd call him, I'm like, you have to come home and sleep a few hours. And fortunately, it was a few blocks down the street from where we live. But it's just, it's putting in and investing that time. Looking back, we're like, that was like a year of hell. Yeah. But it was worth every moment.
You guys are such an incredible example of what hard work and work ethic and understanding what it takes, you know, to be lean and to do it that way. That's such an incredible example. So many people can learn from that. You know, there's a couple of things that you've mentioned through this. I feel like there's somewhat of a common thread here in that, you know, when you started practicing and you're trying to pay off the student loans, and then when you opened your practice, in both cases, when you're being so conscious of the cost and where, you know, the money in, the money out, you have to be willing to, I guess, in a way, be humble and not be, you know, not be caught up in the flash, in the, oh, now I'm a doctor, I want to spend my money, or now I'm a brand new practice and I want to look like I got all these different frame lines and all these different things that you easily get caught up when you're trying to compete with other people. I think that's so, so important. And definitely when we opened our practice, I felt the same way. You know, I actually wanted to just like you did, have very few frame lines and try to make it more boutique-y. And then a few of my colleagues who are doing well and have been practicing longer were like, oh, no, you have to have minimum like 600-700 frames on the board, like up to 1,000 or 1,200. And I was like, that's insane. How am I going to afford that? And, you know, we kind of found some kind of happy medium. But it's easy to get caught up in that when you hear those voices from other people around you. So
it really is. And I always say we are not here to compete against anyone. We wanted to do our own thing. And if it was different from somebody else, then that's going to set us apart. And so the frame lines we chose all had stories behind them. Mm. Brad's Polish. And so we found a frame line from Poland that he loved.
Oh, that's cool.
Paris is one of my favorite places. We found one that was from Paris. So it was just different things. And we tell patients the story too. Like maybe it's a recycled frame, or maybe it's, you know, a lifetime warranty on the frame. So it sets it apart. But we're running in that practice with 400 frames, and our capture rate is really high. So we've really been fortunate to try to meet the needs of patients too.
That's fantastic. And that's another example of working smarter, not harder. If your capture rate is high, then you don't, it doesn't matter how many frames you have really. So yeah. Switching then from the private practice to the sublease practice, this question comes up all the time, and I know I've asked you this before when you were on our group chat webinar a couple months back, but could you lay out a few pros and cons versus a corporate versus private, some benefits to going one way or the other, if a new grad or an optometrist was considering one or the other?
Yeah, so when I took it over, which happened to be the same year the private practice opened, I thought, oh, this is a 1 year thing. I'll be done. This will just help build cash flow. And I ended up loving it. So I really feel if someone's going, I only want private practice, really step back and be a little more open-minded, because I feel the subleases I have absolutely are private practice. Mm. I treat it like that way. I run it that way with medical insurance. All the medical procedures I do there, I do at the private office. It's the same procedures. There's nothing different. Some of the pros to private practice is I have all the holidays off. I can, you know, take off whenever I want, not work weekends. So that's really nice. Where the sublease, I'm required to work weekends, and I do have a lot of fill-in doctors, and a lot of them are younger doctors. I'm telling them, pay off that student debt. You know, I did it. I worked 7 days a week. Now I'm trying to educate and mentor younger doctors to do the same. So a lot of them do work weekends for me. So that's, you know, a little bit different there. One of the cons that I've seen is private practice. A lot of patients may come back and go, this frame's not working, or I don't like these glasses, or this progressive, I have to tilt my head up and down. So you hear a lot of optical things. For my sublease, I don't hear any of that, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, nice. Our optical next door, they triage it. They have a checklist they go through, and it's very, very rare that those patients are coming back over for a refraction or RX check. So that's nice that you don't have that. But as far as how they're run, I mean, I employ my staff at all the offices. So it's my own staff. They get all the same benefits. They get the same, you know, what's happening. The patients get the same experience too. So I hear there are a lot of cons in sublease, but it is what you make of it. In mine, I run like a medical private practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny when I was in school, it was like, I don't know who did it or where it started. Honestly, it just sort of like was this omnipresent like thought or like understanding that corporate was bad. You just don't want to go to corporate.
Right.
And like, oh, yeah. If you go to corporate and
there's
if I mention
it, about it.
Yeah. Like, and if I mention it because a couple of my mentors back home were happened to be owners of sublease practices. And if I brought it up, people would be like, that's what you want to do. I actually didn't know I wanted to do it. I just knew that was an opportunity for me if I wanted it. And, so I started working it. And then even when I would tell people when I was working or now, since we've owned this practice now 7 years, I would almost have to be like coy, but you know, like, you know, I have a practice. I don't mention that it's sublease because I know people would judge me. It's so weird because I'm the same way as you. Like when I'm sitting in here, I feel the exact same way as when I'm sitting in the other practice, you know, speaking to a patient. I'm making mm-hmm. the same types of recommendations, all the other stuff. But you're right. There's a little less pressure from the optical side of things because you know that patient, that's not your business dollars, right? That's somebody else is going to be taking care of that optical side of things and making sure that everything's taken care of there. So definitely some pros and cons. So your husband is your business partner at the private practice and in other areas,
yes.
But in the sublease practices, it's our good friend, Dr. Ryan Court. Is that correct?
Yeah. Absolutely. He's my
and
awesome partner.
Everybody loves Dr. Ryan Court. Just want to give Ryan a shout out. Hey, Ryan.
Heck yeah, he is amazing.
So I know you guys have so much love for each other. It's so cool to see and really aspirational for anybody who's looking to work with a business partner to like aim to have a relationship the way you guys, because I've spoken to Ryan about it multiple times as well. And he tells me how you guys kind of split the duties and that type of thing and what your responsibilities are. But mm-hmm. I'd love to get your take on it. What in your mind does it take to find a good business partner, or what is a good business partner in your mind?
Yeah, it's kind of Brad and Ryan are both the yin to my yang type of thing. It's they have strengths that I don't have. Ryan can run circles around that internet and technology. And, you know, before I met him, if you said, well, how's your SEO? I'd be like, huh, what's that? And he has just, our marketing and advertising budget at all the offices is zero. I mean, we don't spend money on it. And Ryan is just amazing. He can really set up a website and filter everything that he needs to. He's got reviews coming in left and right. He is just amazing with the content. He's also just incredible with our staff too. If something's going on between staff, you know, it comes up and he can just sit and talk through it with everyone. And he's just got that such great skill set. He's a people person.
Yeah.
And patients mm-hmm. love him, staff love him. So we definitely have different areas that are our strengths. I'm more of a analytical, show me the numbers. I like my spreadsheets. I may inundate Ryan with too many spreadsheets sometimes, but it just kind of outlining the practice and how to build it from that sense. So we really kind of complement one another on what our strengths are to come together and build the practice, and open-minded to everything that changes we want to make. It's like, hey, let's try it. If it doesn't work, we'll do something else. And so it's really been an experience to find someone opposite of yourself. Opposite.
Do you find now, let me ask a question. I'll give you my take after, I guess, but do you find because you're opposite that there are conflicts at times? I mean, that can be resolved, yes, but do you find that there are any conflicts that do come up?
Fortunately, I'm sitting here knocking on my desk here. Ryan and I have been partners for 4 years now, and we have not had any conflict.
That's fantastic.
And I know that sounds crazy because I've been partners in other practices before, and it does come up. Things do come up. And I found it was more when I'm very similar to someone and I know, like, I have this Google calendar that I control. I can see where everything goes. And I think Ryan just understands that about me. And I just think we just understand how each other work and tick. And we try not to let any conflicts arise. And I can't think of one in 4 years.
That's fantastic. Well, good for you guys. Definitely, I'll give you my experience that it does come up. I find that it's often a lot like other close relationships that you might have with people. And a lot of times, as long as you're open to getting it, like getting it out there, putting it out there and talking about it, then you get past those conflicts. And usually, like in most relationships, when you talk through it, it makes you a little bit stronger anyway. So it's, there's benefits to having the conflicts in some ways. I'm sure it's probably better if you just don't have them at all, but if you're able to work through them, it does make
you stronger. It's like a marriage though, essentially.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, you're married to your partner. You guys, you succeed together, you're going to fail. I mean, you got to work together to get through it.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So would you have, so other than finding somebody who's sort of opposite, would there be anything else that you're trying to look for? Like just basic qualities like competency or like trustworthiness, anything else that you might think of that you just want to make sure that are core competencies in person?
Yeah, I think you want to set your goals. What are the goals for the practices? And Ryan and I did that with our first practice. We were like, what are we looking to achieve? We both have an understanding of how business works. We were both in big private practices and working with patients. And ultimately, we want to make sure patients are taken care of. So you want someone that has that compassion, that you have similar goals you want to achieve. And if you're going, nope, in 5 years, I want to have five practices. And if the other person's going, I just want to build this one. You really want to make sure as you continue to grow, you're growing on the same path. Because that's when you could really kind of hit that fork in the road and where it could split.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's actually a good way to lead into the next topic, which, you know, you're talking about planning and having the goals and that type of thing. And you have to be one of, if not the maybe the busiest person I know, or the one of the person who has the most on their plate and most on the go at any given time. It's really remarkable to watch. I don't know how you do it, but I'm going to ask you now. Are there things that you can share with us that help you stay? I mean, you've already talked about your Google Calendar, but other ways that you stay productive as far as setting goals. How do you approach each day? Do you set certain tasks for each day, each week, each month? And how could somebody else kind of learn from that to make their life a little bit more efficient and productive?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So every Sunday's a big day for me. In the evening, I look at my calendar and I go, okay, what do I have this week? And usually it's multiple meetings or conference calls or Zoom webinars in the evenings. And I work four full days in clinic during the week. So, and then I have an admin day. So Sunday's a big day where I look and I have to see everything I have going on and prepare all my notes, making sure I carry a notebook with me at all times, going, okay, here's what I have, here's what I need to prepare. And I set blocks of time. And I'll tell my husband, hey, look, I've got a lecture this week. I need to work on the lecture. I need 3-4 hours. I try to do it after the kids go to bed, but sometimes it starts beforehand. And just making sure he's on the same page, he knows where I'm going to be at and what I need to do. So that's the first thing, is kind of that weekly, here's what's happening. For the businesses, I'm on a monthly game with that. I'm checking monthly all of my reports, looking at, you know, bonuses, doctor, staff, capture rates, optical rates, all the rates on a monthly basis. And so I set the last day of the month, or usually the first or second, right around there, I set my admin day, and I spend a lot of time working on those reports. For quarterlies are big. So every quarter I have a day and I go through, I mean, because I pay all my own taxes for all the businesses. I do all of my own accounting, all of my own payroll as well. So every Monday morning I do payroll, and I'm getting pretty quick at it. After a while, it just kind of plug and chug. So quarterlies, you know, getting all those taxes out and just setting up in my Google Calendar. I have alerts that come up, and it's just like, okay, here's what's on the task list. And I just got to check it off. I'm one. If it's on the list, you know, I'm that type A, got to put that check mark next to it.
That's so awesome. Yeah. I'm not so much of a type A, as you might have already been able to tell, not so much of a type A person, but I am that way. If I make a list, I have to check things off. I think that's one of the reasons that people encourage you to make a list, is that you just have this compulsion to check stuff off of it. So I do that every day when I come to work. I'll just scribble it on just a scrap piece of paper, but it's there and I know it has to get done.
So absolutely. Awesome. It's important.
That's fantastic. So, so you set time aside to go over these things at different time periods, weekly, monthly, quarterly. And if somebody like me is, it's one of those things I say, I have a friend who has an issue, but really I'm asking for myself. if somebody like me who is terrible at, you know, setting goals and really setting aside time, what would be like a good first kind of baby step? What do you suggest I do to get myself into a place where I'm more organized in that sense?
Want to find something that you could write things down or put, if you have a Google calendar or a Tickler or a paper calendar, write it down. So that way, hey, you've written it down. That's step one. You know, you've got, you're aware of it. And then maybe each day, just look at and prioritize, okay, I've got to work on this, and set aside whether it's 10 minutes to do a, you know, a partial little task, just to even say, okay, hey, I looked up this journal today. I didn't read it, but hey, I printed it out or I bookmarked it. So it's there. So you can just start filtering things where they need to go. And it doesn't happen overnight. And there's sometimes I'm like, damn, it's never ending. It's a constant cycle of things to do. Is there an end in sight? And honestly, I do check out for 1 week out of the year, no cell phone service. I go somewhere where I can't be found. And I'm like, no one can reach me. Just to like decompress and know that, hey, yeah, hold on. We don't have to be running on cruise control all the time. We can just set things down. And prioritize is probably the most important thing.
Prioritize. And actually, thank you for doing that. You kind of answered the next question I was going to ask you, which was, I've found when I do get on a roll or start to do things like that, where, like you said, it feels never ending. It's like, oh my gosh, it's just one thing piling up on the next. And you know, you think you've taken care of a bunch of stuff, but that pile still looks the same size. It gets a little stressful. How do you manage those times? And you've mentioned that you do check out for a week, a year, but how about those in between periods? Do you do anything to kind of just make sure you're not stressing out?
Yeah, I do. So I really try to find a week, like weekends, sometimes they can get busy, but really to put the phone away from work. Yeah, because, you know, that's the big thing. We always have it in our hand, right? Where I can check my EMR system on my phone. Mm. I can check the schedule. I can check all the social media platforms. Set it aside and go hang out with friends, family. Do something that where you're not thinking of work. Because if we're constantly thinking about it, then it's not fun anymore. And work, you know, we don't want it to be work all the time. We want it to be fun. We want it to be exciting to go someplace every day and see these patients and take care of them.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice for sure. Something that I struggle with from time to time. I go through waves. I think I saw maybe a post that you had done on Instagram that it kind of made me think of it. Like I go through waves of these like motivation and not so motivated. And sometimes I feel a little lazy. Sometimes I feel like I'm like running on full throttle. And it took me a while to kind of learn that it's okay to go through those ups and downs. I think I used to get stressed about, oh, I'm not being productive right now, but it's actually probably a good thing to healthy thing to go through those periods anyways.
It is. We just need to step back and kind of look at the big picture in our life right now. You know, what's ultimately important for me, my family is number one. And it's, if I just keep continuing and going, I'm going to burn myself out. And that's terrible for everyone around me. Yeah. So really just kind of stepping back, taking that breather, focusing your attention on something else. And that's going to be helpful long-term.
Yeah, that's excellent. So we've mentioned Brad's name a bunch of times, and I feel like I should pay him a little more respect and have a little bit of a conversation about him. And in particular, you know, there's other people out there in different realms who do work with their spouse. I don't. My wife is in a completely different industry. But curious to see. I spoke with, I'm not sure if you know, Sheena Taff, Optician About Town. She's so amazing. And her and I were talking, and her and her husband work together. And they're very specific about, they have certain boundaries about talking about work at some places and not at others. I wondered if you and Brad have anything like that, any boundaries or specific rules about work and home.
Yeah, so Brad and I, this Friday is actually our 10-year wedding anniversary. We've been together 16 years. Thanks. And we always said we would never, ever, ever work together. Like, that's not what we wanted. And here we are owning a practice together. It happened, and we're like, wow, it was awesome. We're glad we didn't do it right out of the gate. We're glad we waited and grew individually as optometrists. and then came together. But for us, we have found we love working together. Patients get a kick out of us in the practice because we're always messing around and joking with one another on the days. We don't work every day together.
Yeah.
Right now we're just 2 days a week together, but patients will, you know, they'll heckle with us and who's got the better doctor today. And
that's awesome.
So we said, we just have to keep it light and fun. That was our goal of the practice, is not to be serious, not to have any animosity, anger. We want it to be fun. Mm. And then when we come home, it's about our kids. It's not about work. It's not about, hey, how did we do today? How was the staff? Did we get those orders out? And unless someone's sick or on vacation, you know, we jump in, but it's really just going, okay, now it's family time. Let's talk about other stuff. So we try not to bring work home unless we absolutely have to.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to make sure, again, setting it up, he's my partner. So we want to have the same goals. We want to be on that same path and know that, are we achieving our goals? Because that's just a win-win for both of us then.
Yeah.
So it's, and our families definitely don't like when we talk optometry. We try to keep that down.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Well, the final big topic I wanted to talk to you about was, you are president of the North Carolina Optometric Society.
Yes.
And I'd love for you to, like, what an incredible achievement. First of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
I believe you were, what's the right term? Inaugurated this, is that the right word?
Yep. Installed.
Mm-hmm. Installed just this year, a couple months
ago. June.
Amid all this chaos.
Virtually.
You know, I'd love for you to, like, congratulations and well done, because I'm sure you're doing a fantastic job already with all the craziness that's going on. But if you could just share a little bit about what it's been like, what your job is like, you know, how it's been for the last couple months.
Yeah, so I thought, honestly, when I got installed in June, I'm like, oh, this is going to be a cakewalk here. You know, there's not much, a lot of meetings are virtual. We don't have anything in legislation. Hey, what can I work on? It's not going to be too bad. No, day one was a test for me, and it has been ever since, but in the best way possible. We have a lot going on in the world right now, and it's really important. I felt we jumped on it and said, hey, we're going to make change within our own society, with our association. And it has been change ever since, with massive new optometrists coming together, working on it. I formed four new committees that have never been a part of the state society before. One is the Young OD committee. They're really focused on those young optometrists. We have a diversity and inclusion committee, which I feel in this day and age is so important. I mean, we need to see this change happen. And I truly feel where the committee is going is just phenomenal. So we have big things coming there. We have an ethics committee looking at all the bylaws this year, which bylaws, you know, they're there and they've been there for years. Maybe it's time to look at with the change happening.
Mm.
So a lot of new exciting things within our society. Not just with the legislative factor and looking at what bills and scope, but the whole being inclusive and having all optometrists involved and work together in our state was really important to me. And focusing on patient care, we've got some great programs coming in out for our community. So I'm really excited that just because it's all virtual doesn't mean we can't do anything. We really have a lot going on.
Even with all of that, the fact that everything is virtual and people's focus is all over the place, you still manage to do so much in such a short period of time. It's amazing.
Well, it's really all my committees. We have awesome committee chairs and committee members that are taking it upon themselves and setting their goals and getting the work done. And, you know, I'm watching through the reports. Here's my Google Sheets. We all can write in everything that we're doing, all the goals, and see and follow along. And it's been incredible, actually, just these few months and what has happened already.
That's great. Great job. Would you have any advice now in your position? And, you know, there's some things happening with the new FTC rules kind of coming into place and the kind of the chatter around that, you know, or just in general, any advice or suggestions that you might have for ODs in general across the country, across North America, that you'd like to share?
Get involved. That's my number one advice for ODs, young, any age, get involved. In order for our profession to move forward, we all need to be involved and aware of what's going on. Mm. Learn who your legislators are. And if you know them, meet with them, talk with them. If you don't know them, find someone that does in your area and have them mentor you. And because that's how change is going to be made, is going to the legislature and talking with them and getting bills there to where we can change how we practice. Because students, they're learning a heck of a lot more these days in school than I learned 10 years ago. And there's many states that can't even practice what they're taught. Mm-hmm. So in order to make change, we need to have everyone get involved and work together. Donate to your PAC, your political action campaign, through the AOA, through your state. Reach out to your state associations and state societies. See how they need help. See what might interest you and what you can do for your profession.
I think that's fantastic advice, and I would echo that, definitely echo that. We here in BC, unfortunately, we've been through some pretty significant changes in the past decade, and a lot of it came down to not being able to pull in the same direction. So highly, highly encourage everyone to follow Rachel's advice there. So Rachel, you might know this already, but I finish every interview with two questions. You've actually answered one of them during the webinar in the past, but I'm going to ask anyways, because there's probably different people listening to this one. So the first question is, if we could jump in a time machine and go back to some point in your life where maybe it was a difficult time, you could have been a child or an adult, you could share that specific moment if you'd like, but more importantly, I'd love for you to share any advice that you might want to give yourself at some point in the past.
Yeah, right away, this is high school for me. High school, I didn't have a path. I didn't know what I was going to do. I played golf. That was all I could do, was I just wanted to golf the rest of my life and knew I was going to college to play golf. Looking back, I wish I would have had the confidence to reach out to people in job shadow, going to different places, figuring out, hey, I could have done this with my life. I love what I do, but it's because my golf coach actually pushed me in this direction. I wonder what other potential I may have left behind because I didn't have the confidence to go out and find other things. I think I just hid in the shadows and wanted to be that quiet one, not get in any trouble, not make any waves. And it's have a voice, speak out, be loud. You know, high school's only 4 years. You'll move on, go on to the next thing, but get creative and be yourself.
Yeah, that's incredible advice. And I can't believe that was you in high school. Lots changed since then, huh? Definitely not the type to sit in the corner and be quiet anymore. And that's the world is better for it.
That's not me.
That's fantastic. That's excellent advice. Thank you for sharing that. And actually, if I can just add my own, I think that's so amazing. When students do reach out to me, I think it's incredible. And I always commend them on taking the initiative for doing that. Even if I don't have something to offer them myself, I am willing to go out of my way to help them because I know that it took a lot of courage for them to reach out to me. So I always encourage students and other people to do that. And don't be afraid. Nobody's gonna say anything mean to you. If anything, you never know what kind of magical opportunity might come your way. So it's definitely worth the effort.
I agree. I am so impressed with the students that reach out to me and the questions they're asking me. Is they're like freshmen in college asking me about optometry or in optometry school and, hey, what should I be doing now? I'm like, oh my goodness, if only I had done those things back then. So exactly. Major kudos to those that are already asking questions.
Absolutely. So the final question is the one that you have heard before, and you have achieved so much already and you're so young. How much of everything that you have achieved would you say is due to luck, and how much is due to hard work?
I would have to say the majority is hard work. I have busted my tail working long hours. I can look back and say it was totally worth it because I'm at a place in my life where I can take vacations. I can take the day off from the office and not stress that I don't have that paycheck for that day. You know, I've worked really hard to get to this point and I still love what I do. And, you know, yes, there's luck, but hard work for me, it paid off.
That's fair. It does seem to be paying off. And obviously from the stories you've told me, I think that's pretty evident how much, how hard you and Brett have worked. So it's nice to see that everything is working well for you guys. I'm knocking on wood over here for you too. Where can people find you? If anybody wants to follow you, reach out to you, where would they go?
Yeah, so my biggest thing I use is Instagram. And my platform was kind of focusing on, hey, I'm a mom, I'm a business owner, I'm this boss lady that can do it all and multitask and figure it out. And so I like to share that because you can do it too. And it's my way of you seeing my life and how it unfolds on a daily basis. And it's not always pretty, but hey, we're living it. So on Instagram, I'm at Dr. I Got This. My websites for my offices are BelmontEye.net and NorthlakeEye.com. Also ways of getting in touch with me through email there.
Awesome. Fantastic. Any last words of wisdom or fun thoughts you'd like to share before we end?
Keep pushing. Don't ever stop. Don't let anyone take you down. Don't let anyone tell you you can't do something. Just keep pushing. Keep following your path. Create your own destiny.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Amazing words of wisdom. Thank you, everybody who tuned in to watch and to learn from Rachel. I'm sure you took a lot away from this. I know I did. I was like mentally scribbling notes and I had my phone in front of me. I'm going to open up my new Google Calendar starting tomorrow. But if you took anything away from this that was of value, please do share it. Take a screenshot, tag us, put it up on your Instagram story, tag myself, tag Dr. I Got This. And if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe and leave a comment. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining me. Thank you so much, Rachel, for all the amazing words of wisdom.
Thank you so much for having me. And I got to say, kudos to you. You have done a phenomenal job up there.
Ah, thank you so much. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm sure we'll meet again here. But thanks again for this.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Bye.